from WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Love it or hate it, Fox News has dramatically changed this nation's political conversation. And the man behind the whole operation is Roger Ailes. At Fox News headquarters, he's the Great Oz, ultra-pugnacious, disdainful of the lamestream, mainstream media, as he calls it, but also, says journalist Gabriel Sherman, a television visionary. A visionary, says Sherman, who has divided the nation. This hour On Point, from Fox News to MSNBC, Roger Ailes and the polarization of cable news. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you depend on Fox? Do you loathe Fox? Is MSNBC the counterpart, the antidote? And what have we won and lost in the age of Fox? Later in this hour, on this Martin Luther King Day, we'll look at how the national news media is and is not keeping up with the diversity of this nation. But first, Fox News, Roger Ailes, in our polarized news world. Joining me from New York is Gabriel Sherman. He's a contributing editor at New York Magazine, spent years working on his new book, and it's getting a lot of attention. It is The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. We'll hear in a few minutes from Khalif Hassana, New Yorker writer who's written a lot about MSNBC. But first, to Gabriel Sherman. Gabe Sherman, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Would you just listen with us for a minute to the voice of the man you spent so much time writing about, just so our listeners can have it in their ears as we think about Roger Ailes, Fox News, and more. Here he is. This is 2010. He was a guest at the Hoover Institution's webcast, Uncommon Knowledge. And Roger Ailes said he wasn't necessarily a conservative. At heart, he is a contrarian. And that's why Fox News provides the service it does.
Somebody started on me about Fox News being conservative. And I said, are you comfortable with CNN and MSNBC? And he said, absolutely. And I said, what about NBC, ABC, and CBS? He said, fine. I said, PBS, NPR, no problem. I said, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times. He said, great. I said, so, but this little cable channel called Fox is somehow ruining your life. I said, keep in mind, the last two guys to get all of them lined up together were Hitler and Stalin. That did not work out well for people. So if to be honest with you, if all the media tipped to the right, I'd be the biggest liberal in New York.
Roger Ailes in 2010, this little cable channel called Fox and plenty of other grenades. He knows how to toss them. It's not a little cable channel. Give us a sense of the scale of Fox now, Gabriel.
Well, Tom, Fox News is the most dominant cable news network in the industry. Its ratings exceed MSNBC and CNN by a factor of two. It's twice the size of its nearest rivals. It generates something on the order of $1 billion for Rupert Murdoch's media empire. It is a stunning business achievement and was, you know, really the driver behind my desire to write about this network that is a phenomenon. And after 3 years of reporting, very early on, I realized that the heart of the story is Roger Ailes, that the network is a complete expression of his worldview. It operates completely under his control. And to understand Fox, you have to understand Roger Ailes.
In the front piece of your book, The Loudest Voice in the Room, you quote Ralph Waldo Emerson saying, an institution is the lengthened shadow of one man. In my experience, very often there's a lot of truth to that. So this one man, who is he?
So Roger Ailes is a television visionary. He is had this remarkably fascinating and diverse life. Going back to his childhood in a factory town in northeast Ohio. He was a product of the 1940s and 50s. His father was a blue-collar guy, worked at the Packard automotive plant, lived a frustrated life, and early on Roger Ailes decided he never would repeat the mistakes of his father. And I think that one of the defining episodes of his childhood was his struggle with hemophilia, which in those years was a very serious medical condition, and it was a marked Roger Ailes' lifelong struggle with, you know, debilitating disease. But from that, he had this bottomless ambition to succeed. He ended up at Ohio University in a pioneering broadcasting program in the 1950s and early 60s. And then he landed on a daytime TV show in Cleveland called The Mike Douglas Show, which was a huge cultural institution of the early to mid-60s, popular with a middle American audience. And from that show, Ailes catapulted himself to become the executive producer in only a few short years. And it was from there that his career was made, because it was on the set of the Mike Douglas Show that he had a fateful encounter with Richard Nixon. And Ailes learned that television and politics could fuse into this new form of communication, and he was better at it than any single person of his generation.
Richard Nixon, as you report, and others said to him, what was it? You know, he regrets having to be mixed up with all this cheesy television stuff. And Roger Ailes said?
Well, so this is the creation myth of Roger Ailes, and as he recounts it, he encountered Richard Nixon in his office, and Nixon said, you know, it's a shame a man like me has to use a gimmick like this to get elected. And Ailes, the 27-year-old, snaps back, if you think that way, you're going to lose again. And in that moment, you see everything about Roger Ailes. You see the aggression, you see the confidence, you see the swagger, the idea that he would be talking back to the former vice president and teach him a lesson, and not only that, land himself a job on the campaign, shows you what a like charismatic figure he is.
Flash forward a few decades, and he's at the helm, very much at the helm, of the most powerful cable news operation out there. Here, Bill O'Reilly, host of Fox, The O'Reilly Factor, opened a show just Friday night, castigating all the rest of the news media for not reporting or underreporting new reports out of Congress on what he called the Benghazi cover-up. O'Reilly.
First of all, an amazing thing happened. On Tuesday night, none of the three network news broadcasts even covered the House report that says then-Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta told President Obama on the very day Libyan Ambassador Christopher Stevens was assassinated that terrorists did it. No one covered it at night. No net covered it Wednesday morning. Nothing.
Bill O'Reilly, Friday night there on Fox News. And the attitude that we know so well from Bill O'Reilly there, of course, he's got his own, but you trace it right back to Roger Ailes. How do you just define that Fox News attitude?
Mm-hmm. I think to understand it, you have to go back in time to Roger Ailes' work as a political consultant and as a Broadway theater producer in the 1970s. You know, he understands theater and drama and suspense. And in the 1980s, he was the most dominant mercenary political operative on the right. He made devastatingly effective attack ads on behalf of politicians like Mitch McConnell, George H.W. Bush, Senator Phil Graham. And those two skills, theater and drama and wedge issues, have fused and combined at Fox to create this powerful tonic. And O'Reilly, in that segment that you just played, is using the grievance, using the sense of frustration at the media to galvanize his audience. And that is a large part of Fox's success. In a certain way, Ailes is running a relentless political campaign against the rest of the media. His audience has been conditioned time and again from Fox anchors to view the rest of the, quote, mainstream media as part of a conspiracy or a campaign to help Democrats. And that message really drives Fox's audience. And that O'Reilly clip is a perfect distillation of that strategy.
He likes to describe his role as that fusing of entertainment with politics, saying he saw that, he just caught the wave. Here he was again in 2010 on Uncommon Knowledge.
I had a sense of what was going to happen in television, that there would be a mixture of entertainment, information, politics. It's all one now. And if they looked at Jack Parr, they wanted their politicians to be as comfortable as he was telling a story. And Jack Kennedy, of course, changed everything because he was so handsome and articulate. And so I think that the times changed. I was there.
The times changed. I was there. Just caught the wave. You say there's a lot more to it, Gabriel Sherman, including you do a kind of psychoanalysis here. You take us all the way back to a story of Roger Ailes and his father in his bedroom there in Warren, Ohio, as a boy. His father, I guess he was up on the bunk bed, and his father said, "Jump to me, Roger." What's the story?
Well, this is a story that Ailes himself has retold through the years. I report this story in my book from a close friend of Roger Ailes who heard this story in the 1970s. You know, the only two people who know if this story is true would be Roger Ailes and his father. But as Ailes himself has told it, Ailes was in his bedroom and his father came in and said, "Roger, jump into my arms." And Ailes was on the top bunk and Ailes jumped and his father stepped back and the young boy fell to the floor. And his father, as Ailes recounts it, was standing over him and said, "That's a lesson for you. Don't ever trust anyone." Now, this story has been sort of viewed in many different ways. I want to make it clear. I'm not trying to play gotcha with Roger Ailes. This book was, you know, rigorously reported based on 3 years of work. Whether or not that story happened, to me, what is most revealing is the fact that Ailes himself has told this story. And I know from the historical record, I've consulted the divorce records of his parents. I interviewed his brother at length. I know that Roger Ailes grew up in a violent household. His father, Robert Ailes Sr., was a volatile man, had a propensity to inflict violence upon the children. Roger Ailes' brother told me that if their father acted today like he did in their youth, they would have grown up in a foster home and his father would have been in jail. So we know from the historical record that it was a violent household. Whether or not Ailes' father did this sadistic episode, as Ailes himself recounts it, it may be this shorthand that Ailes told through the years to kind of portray his youth as a dark place. But it is revealing of Ailes' ability to spin these myths that make his life infused with drama and tension. And it's part of his success. You know, he has been this one of the biggest image manipulations he's been able to achieve, not only on behalf of his Republican clients and his news network, is his own story. And he's a wonderful storyteller.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Fox News, its mastermind, Roger Ailes, and our polarized cable news world, Fox versus NBC, counterparts, not counterparts. You tell us. Gabriel Sherman is with us. His big new book is The Loudest Voice in the Room on Roger Ailes, and it is getting a lot of attention. Just a taste of each year, Fox News routinely rings the alarm on over the years on the war on Christmas. This past Christmas, Fox's Megyn Kelly took to the ramparts again, this time to declare that there's no changing the fact that Santa Claus is a white man.
In Slate, they have a piece on .com, Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed and I said, oh, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa, you know? And by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white, but this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa. But, you know, Santa is what he is, and just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids. Okay, I wanted to get that straight.
Okay, Santa is white, says Megyn Kelly of Fox News. There's a tone there that we quickly recognize. What about on MSNBC? Here was Rachel Maddow. This was Friday, where the story du jour was Governor Chris Christie and accusations his staff had closed down traffic lanes, more than accusations, on the George Washington Bridge in political retaliation, reporting the latest developments here. Yes, but with a certain glee.
If you work in this business, if you work in the news business, late in the day on a Friday is the happiest time of the week. Because late in the day on a Friday is the time when huge and unexpected news tends to drop out of the sky. Subpoenas have been served and now publicly released in the Chris Christie bridge scandal in New Jersey to the governor's office itself. And to Governor Chris Christie's campaign for re-election.
A revved up Rachel Maddow there on MSNBC. Gabriel Sherman joins us from New York, and from New York as well right now, Kelly Fasana, staff writer for The New Yorker. He's written a lot about MSNBC, keeps a big eye in the media world. Kelly Fasana, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks.
So MSNBC, you've written about it. Do you see it as a parallel to Fox, something different, a reaction to Fox?
Well, there's certainly a similar feeling inside MSNBC, that wonderful Roger Ailes clip where he's talking about how he's got MSNBC and CNN and ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR, PBS, the whole media establishment against him. There's a similar feeling within MSNBC. In other words, that Fox is the big gorilla in the cable news network, that even AM radio is still important, and that MSNBC is kind of a beacon of counter-programming to this really – against this really successful conservative establishment. And I think this is often true in politics, right? I think people who care a lot about politics often have a tendency to view their political enemies as being really powerful, really dominant. That said, I think if we zoom out just for a second, the Fox idea that there is this big mainstream media industry that's not particularly hospitable to conservative viewpoints, I certainly don't think that's crazy.
It's one thing to see yourself as circling the wagons in a certain portion of the media, but does MSNBC define itself around an ideology as Fox does, and does it have a Roger Ailes?
Well, I mean, all these networks are a little bit coy about coming right out and saying this is our viewpoint. But certainly it's the case that MSNBC started finding success around Keith Olbermann and around the idea of presenting a viewpoint that was definitely liberal in nature. One of the interesting differences between the two is that Roger Ailes is a guy who cares a lot about politics. He's also a brilliant TV guy, but he's someone who really loves politics. Phil Griffin, who runs MSNBC, is a lifelong television guy who's not a particularly ideological person. No one who works there really thinks that he gets up in the morning thinking, you know, how can I do battle for these liberal ideas I really believe in? And the odd twist, though, is that Roger Ailes, despite being someone who really loves politics, often staffs his network with people who rose through the ranks of television, right? If you turn on Fox News, a lot of the hosts on Fox News are professional TV people who have then come to Fox News. Whereas if you turn on MSNBC, a lot of the people are people who come up through politics or occasionally through academia. These are idea people, ideology people, who then have turned to TV. So you've got this – you've got in Phil Griffin, who runs MSNBC, you have a TV person who has kind of staffed his network with true believers, which is in some ways kind of an opposite approach that Fox has.
Gabe Sherman, what do you see that might be similar here or that may be different? Certainly the scale is different.
Yeah, the scale is different. I think one important point to make is that MSNBC really stumbled into their business. You know, Fox had a founding mission. And in 1996, when Ailes joined Rupert Murdoch to launch a cable news network, there was a founding mission, there was an idea, and they've realized that idea. Now, there's an episode in my book that recounts the struggles at MSNBC in the run-up to the Iraq War, because Fox's stunning success from 1998 to 2002, in which they surpassed CNN to become the most dominant cable network, really scared executives inside MSNBC and General Electric, its parent company, because they couldn't sort of find rating success. So one idea in 2003 was that they were going to become more conservative than Fox. You know, it's ironic that we associate MSNBC on the left today, but there was a brief moment when they went out and hired talk radio hosts and conservatives to try to become even further to the right than Fox. And the case study in my book that I sort of – the story that I tell is the struggles of Phil Donahue, who was going to be their primetime marquee host. Mm. They brought him in. He was, you know, the big talk show host of the 1980s and 90s. And then all of a sudden, he was viewed as too liberal. And right before the Iraq War, his show was canceled. And so in that moment, you see MSNBC flailing around left to right, right to left, not really having a mission. And as and so as you see – they stumbled into this sort of liberal niche. There was not this grand plan that Ailes had. And that's really the fundamental difference that I see.
We should remember just what the numbers were in 1996. I mean, that was the MSNBC's creation year as well. CNN had 60 million subscribers. MSNBC had 25 million. Fox debuted with 17 million. And those numbers today, Gabe?
Well, Fox's, you know, has distribution all across the country. You know, it's a very mature business. Their ratings are – their total audience is massive. I think one point to make out, though, is that their audience is older. It's an older, generally white, middle-class audience. And the demographics are changing. And MSNBC has actually had some success in a younger demographic that advertisers use to make purchasing decisions. So in that tension, you see that Fox's scale and size surpasses its rivals. But then when you break down the numbers a little bit, you see that MSNBC, by tacking to the progressive side of the spectrum, has found success with a younger demographic.
Let's go to Chris in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin. Chris, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you that I moved from the very progressive town of Madison, Wisconsin, out into the very redneck rural part of Wisconsin. And you can look this up. It's like red and blue. And there is a second tier of communication going on here, which is that there are certain people who are watching Fox News, not doing their fact-checking, not anything, and just normal people having normal jobs, you know, whatever.
Yep.
And they are getting on the Internet, and they are passing this garbage all over the place, and nobody is, like, countering it at all. And so they're operating under this as being facts from their friends, facts from people they know on the Internet, and it's all misinformation, and it's very scary.
Chris, when you say nobody countering it at all, what about mainstream media, however you might define that? What about MSNBC?
They aren't watching the TV. I would go into this bar and get a hamburger in the afternoon and turn Charlie Rose on, or somebody would drive them absolutely crazy. They wouldn't even let me put the sound on because they just did not want to listen to it, because they just don't believe it anymore. And they're not interested in getting the facts. They just want to listen to their friends on the internet, and they trust this stuff. They trust these people who are just spewing garbage.
You say they're not interested in getting facts, but presumably they think they are getting facts, Chris.
Absolutely they do. They absolutely believe they're getting facts.
Gabriel Sherman, Chris, thanks for your call. Gabe, there's your division. I mean, Chris moves, you know, from one part of the state, her state, Wisconsin, to another, and she moves into a different media universe. I know this part of the country well, and I know many households where, the TV's in the kitchen. It may be on all day, and it would be on Fox all day.
Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful story I tell in the book about Fox's early years, in which they had a static logo in the lower left-hand corner of the screen, the Fox News logo. And the network started getting complaints from viewers who would call in to say that when they would turn their TV off at night, they would have a ghost image of the Fox logo right, burned onto their TV tube. And so they had the graphics department develop a spinning logo that would rotate like a screensaver. And it was in that moment you see that for many of Fox's loyal audience, it would stay on all day long. And it was almost this gospel that they would turn on in the morning and follow through to the end of the day. And that is a testament to Ailes' success of finding storylines, finding anchors that connect with viewers. And I think there's one more thing I'll say is that when Ailes launched Fox News, there was a saying that would go around the network, and top executives would say, people don't want to be informed, they want to feel informed. And now you could say that's cynical, you could say that is sort of a crass way to look at it, but that's reflective of Ailes' deep understanding of the American people. You know, for years he was crisscrossing the country as a political operative, and he met, you know, so many people and learned what makes Americans tick, and it's that deep understanding that he uses to program Fox.
Caliph Hassana, Gabe Sherman, right in his title, says Roger Ailes through Fox divided the country. I wonder about that. Do you agree that he divided the country, or did he find a divide and serve it?
Yeah, I mean, when I hear that story about the viewers in Wisconsin, I think of this huge audience that had really, in a sense, been underserved by the media for a long time. And this is the hunger that Roger Ailes capitalizes on, and the fact that people were so upset and so skeptical about what the media was telling them. And part of the reason these debates are so complicated is it's kind of hard to analyze what it is that Fox is doing without bringing politics into that analysis. In other words, if you think that the story that Fox is covering is a ridiculous story and they're not giving you the true facts, then Fox looks like a propaganda organization. Whereas if you think they're covering really important stories that the mainstream media is ignoring, then they seem like a vital part of our landscape. And I think in general, we can only be excited about the fact that people have more choices and more ability to choose to consume news the way they want to. I mean, I think when I hear people who voice those worries about the idea that people are somehow consuming too much Fox or that their diet is too dominated by this media outlet, I get a little skeptical, because the alternative to that is people not having a choice to consume news in the way they want to.
But what about the argument that you heard our caller make, that this her word was garbage? I mean, that you've got misinformation and information, and they're not the same, and we should make a factual distinction.
But again, those distinctions turn out to be really hard to make without also making political judgments. And I think part of what you're seeing there is the fact that our political landscape has gotten, some people would say, more polarized. I would also say more coherent, right? As the Republican and the Democratic parties more and more come to reflect the conservative and the liberal movements, you have people who really disagree about what the facts are and what the important stories are. And it makes sense that our news media would reflect that kind of polarization.
Gabe Sherman, can you have a legitimate disagreement on the facts here? The traditional notion of the media was that they were supposed to go out and find the facts. And of course, there could be political shading and spin, but that somebody was tasked to just go bring us the real information.
I think this is a testament to Ailes' genius as a political strategist. You know, one way to think about how he divided the country is to just look at his own network. And, you know, the most common question I got in the more than 3 years of research that went into this book when I would tell people what I was working on, the first question would be, are you a Fox fan or are you a Fox hater? Are you pro-Fox or are you anti-Fox? There was absolutely no nuance, you know, because my job as a reporter was to try to understand how Ailes both built this phenomenally successful business.
And these were Fox world people you were trying to talk to, presumably. And they wanted
And people outside the Fox world, even, you know, anyone. Someone would say, oh, well, are you doing a takedown? Or are you going to help Fox? It was one side or the other. And it was in that polarization of just discussing Fox itself that in a microcosm, you could see how the programming that Ailes puts on television divides group from group. And so that is like a really tight metaphor that helps us understand how this wedge issue.
But with real facts or with misinformation?
Well, I think that Ailes is both a TV guy and a political guy. And part of what makes Fox successful, and I would sort of separate it from MSNBC, is the degree to which it is controlled by one man. Now, it starts with an 8 a.m. meeting, and throughout the day, Ailes' worldview radiates out through the building. Everyone in that building is working in service of advancing his worldview, whereas MSNBC has sort of diverse power centers. Different shows do different things. Even though they may be all progressive or mainly progressive, there is not this kind of unified packaging that takes place at the network. And that was where Fox stands out, is because Ailes is able to drive a message from his office all the way through the network.
Chris in Toronto, Canada. Chris, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. My blood pressure is through the roof right now because, you know, I love your program, but it's just lazy thinking to equate MSNBC with Fox. Okay, Fox misrepresents the facts. They obfuscate the truth. They outright lie to people. They mislead people. You know, their polls show that their audience is the most uninformed of all people who watch news. Okay, and just to echo what your guest Khalifa said, MSNBC, they're thoughtful, they're nuanced, they're substantive. They don't lie to people.
Well, we're looking for exactly these distinctions, Chris. I think you do see a polarized world, and there are polls, one way bigger than the other. I'm not saying there aren't distinctions, but Khalifa, what about blood pressure through the roof at the mere, contemplation of the two in one conversation?
Well, but this is exactly the phenomenon we're talking about, right? It becomes harder and harder not to pick a side. I mean, I think it goes beyond cable news, right? We have all sorts of things that somehow become shorthand for where you stand politically. Do you support Duck Dynasty or are you angry at Duck Dynasty, right? And I think more and more it becomes hard to avoid getting sucked into this dynamic.
But Chris,
right?
He's suggesting he doesn't want that dynamic. He wants facts, and he's saying one side doesn't deliver them.
Well, sure, but that's a reflection of that dynamic, right? I mean, sure, yeah, I don't want polarization. I want the other side to agree with me, right? And I'm not saying that anyone, me included, is somehow immune from this dynamic. But I think what Roger Ailes did, which was really smart, was make it impossible not to argue about politics when we argue about news.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Fox News, its mastermind, Roger Ailes, and our polarized cable news world. Gabriel Sherman is with us, author of the book getting a lot of buzz these days, The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Khalifa Saneh is with us, staff writer for The New Yorker. He has written brilliantly about the cable news world, the media world. He's written in depth about MSNBC. Joins us today from New York. Before this hour is over, on this Martin Luther King Day, we're going to step back and look at whether or not how the national news media is reflecting the increasing diversity of our country. You could make the case neither Fox or MSNBC or a whole lot of others really fully do that. Stand by for that. MSNBC had its moment in December that raised a whole lot of hackles. This was on Melissa Harris-Perry's show. Got the host in trouble, ended with a tearful apology to former presidential candidate Mitt Romney. Harris-Perry and guest Pia Glenn, an actress, sounded a little snide talking about Romney and his adopted African-American grandson.
This is the Romney family,
right?
And of course, there on Governor Romney's knee is his adopted grandson, who is an African American, adopted African American child, Kieran Romney. Any caption for this one?
One of these things is not.
Apology came for that. A family portrait of the Romney family with the adopted African American grandchild there, and the suggestion that this is the way the Republican Party rolls. That token, maybe a different scale or approach, though, from what we heard. This was May 2012, as the 2012 presidential campaign season was underway. Fox's morning show, Fox and Friends, ran a 4-minute video, essentially an attack ad as part of its show, mostly uses Obama's voice, but over graphics and menacing music that made it clear that President Obama's first term was an uninterrupted string of failures and betrayals. Ailes, Roger Ailes, was said to be behind the attack ad. Fox denied it.
We are making progress.
I don't put people on food stamps. People become eligible for food stamps.
If you want to create jobs, the quickest way to do it is to provide more funding for food
it's
stamps.
It's an honor to be a food stamp president.
More people have been put on food stamps by Barack Obama than any president in American history.
That was some 4 minutes. Gabe Sherman, I think your book says that it was Roger Ailes behind that.
Yeah, it's one of the revelations in the book. You know, at the time that segment created an outrage, it was, you know, clearly a piece of political propaganda. And Fox released a statement saying that Roger Ailes and senior executives were not aware of the video, and they blamed its creation on a low-level producer. But in my reporting, I show that Roger Ailes was in a meeting where one source described him as giving the overview, and it was his, quote, brainchild. And clearly that ad is reflective of his career in the 1980s as a hard-hitting political ad maker. You know, one of Roger Ailes' colleagues told me that he once loved 30-second issue ads because you can only pick one issue or the other. No nuance. You have to be on one side or the other. And that 4-minute segment is a string of facts that portray Obama as only one thing, a failed president. And so you can see Roger Ailes's fingerprints and his sensibility all over that segment.
Khalif Hassan, here's a couple of comments from listeners on Twitter. Sarah writes to us, Fox News and NBC aren't news networks. They're news entertainment. Both feed on anger and fear and serve as distractions. Nicole says, is this a sign of our populace, an apathy toward learning the truth? What do you say, Khalif?
Well, again, the clips you just played are a good example of the fact that when we're arguing about these cable news networks, often facts aren't actually what we're arguing about, right? Often they're expressing their identity through priorities, through emphasis, through attitude. You know, the issue with the Romney segment on Melissa Harris Perry's show or the anti-Obama ad wasn't really that they were somehow factually wrong necessarily. It was the question of tone and emphasis and attitude, and that's often what this argument is. I think it's true that these aren't necessarily news networks. I think MSNBC in particular is a kind of a political discussion network, and Fox obviously combines some news stories and some politics. And I think it's fair to say that neither of them is a straight news network. The question is that what people want? And the further question is, what would a straight news network even look like at this point?
Michael in Buffalo, New York. Thank you for calling, Michael. You're on the air.
Yeah. I guess I'm going to take the other side of this argument for a second. I watch Fox News.
Okay.
I don't just watch Fox News. I also watch MSNBC. I watch both of them. That way, when I come into a debate, not just with y'all, but with anybody else, I'm not ignorant to both sides of the argument. On both sides of the argument, I see both sides attacking each other. MSNBC attacks Fox News and Republicans saying that we are that we hold this country down, that we deteriorate this country, that Republicans do this. And Fox News comes right back at them saying, well, Democrats do this, Democrats do that, Democrats do this. It's a back-and-forth battle between two sides. If people like me, I like Fox News. I'm 22 years old. So I'm not the 40-year-old middle-class white male who watches. I'm 22 years old. I like Fox News.
Why do you like it, Michael? What do you like about it?
I like what Fox News has to report. Fox News reports the stuff that MSNBC does not report. Fox News, I've never heard one. I've heard a couple times, okay, where MSNBC and Fox News report the same thing, but they report it from two different angles. MSNBC will report it from a liberal side of view. MSNBC reports it from their side. Fox News reports it from the Republican side. It's a Republican news channel and a liberal news channel. It's what they are. And, of course, they're going to tailor what they got to say to their side of it.
Michael, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Gabriel Sherman, does that work for a country to have, you know, you get half of it here and you get half of it there? Do we ever put it together?
I think if it's the only form of news for consumers, that's obviously presents problems, because when facts become a forum for politics, you know, there is no way to cover issues where one side has a stake in the outcome. You know, I think one of the consequences of Ailes' success is that for millions of people, news is now viewed as a weapon to advance your side's agenda. And unfortunately, as someone who makes a living as a reporter, and I take that sort of tradition very seriously, that you go out and you try to report complexity and nuance and you're not driven by an agenda, you know, that's sort of frustrating to me. But I think you have to just acknowledge the reality that Ailes has transformed the news industry. His success has spawned spillover success, and MSNBC has counterprogrammed to Fox.
Let's also bear in mind that Fox is influential because its viewers are so engaged and because it's so focused on politics. That said, you know, 3 million people might watch Bill O'Reilly's show on a given night, and 30 million people will watch the combined network newscast. So it's not as if we have this news environment where almost all our information is coming from Fox. It's still actually a relatively small point. And even beyond that, we're at a moment where it seems less danger than ever of a cable news channel dominating how we get our news. If anything, cable news channels are fighting for continued relevancy at a time when our sources of news, including online sources, are really exploding.
And I think that's an important point. You know, in my book, the story of the 2012 campaign is really a story of failure for Roger Ailes. He declared in a meeting with his top executives that he wanted to elect the next president. He made it his mission to defeat Barack Obama, and he turned Fox News into a 24-hour essentially war room for Mitt Romney's campaign, and he was unsuccessful. I mean, that is a testament to the limits of cable news to drive the conversation. And so, you know, we're seeing the continued fracturing of our media landscape with online media, social media, new cable channels, web streaming channels, that, you know, Ailes, you know, certainly created the biggest phenomenon of this sort of partisan media landscape. But now there will be many, many, many more spinoffs.
He's a savvy guy. Does he think his day is done? Fox's day is done?
No, I think Roger Ailes is a fighter, and he gets up every day, you know, waging battle, and he's ready, you know, as fiery as he's ever been.
Gabriel Sherman, author of The Loudest Voice in the Room, I want to thank you for being with us today. Thanks very much for the insights you've shared right here.
Thanks for having me.
And Khalifa Sana, staff writer for The New Yorker, for all your reporting on this whole neck of the woods, Khalifa, MSNBC, Fox, and beyond. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
In a moment, on Martin Luther King Day, has the national news media kept up with this country's exploding diversity? This is On Point. On this Martin Luther King Day, we can't help wondering not only about the polarization of our national news media, but also about its overall perspective on and reflection of our very diverse nation. Brian Monroe joins me, Washington editor for opinion and commentary at CNN, former president of the National Association of Black Journalists, winner of the 2006 Pulitzer Prize for public service for his leading role on Knight Ridders and the Biloxi Sun-Herald's coverage of Hurricane Katrina. Brian Monroe, welcome back to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us here today.
Tom, my friend, always good to be with you.
We knew we were going to be talking about Fox and MSNBC, and it would be Martin Luther King Day. And you know, when you sit back and just let the hosts, it's not just one color, but when you let the whole picture sort of run before your eyes and the guests, it's a white picture. It's a fairly white picture. And it made us think about the national news media today up against the demographics of this country and where the news media is keeping up with the many perspectives exploding in this country and where it's not. We thought we'd just chat with you about it. What's your big take?
Well, you know, that's sort of a great opening, you know, coming off of the Roger Ailes book and looking at the concentration of ownership and power, whether it's Fox News or in politically polarized broadcasting. You see the same thing in the news media in general. And you would hope that in 2014 it's going to get better, but actually it's probably getting worse. We just saw where the Michael and Steve Roberts are selling Roberts Broadcasting, which ended up being the last black-owned television group. There are now no minority black African-American-owned television groups out there anymore. Zero. And, you know, that speaks to diversity of voice. It speaks to diversity of coverage. And, again, not just what's covered, but what's not covered. Who do you see, who you don't see?
So when you add it up, I mean, there are certainly African-Americans who are on network news, who are on cable news. There are whole – Roberts may be gone, but you've got Univision and lots of Hispanic, Latino news outlets and media outlets. You know, you can look across the internet these days and find everybody represented one way or another. Net-net, does this country get – this country's diversity find voice in its national news media?
Well, Tom, you know, I'm probably one of the biggest advocates of digital news and digital media. And there has been an explosion of outlets, whether the websites, mobile sites, and other ways of getting information out there that speak to a wide range of voices on the Internet. And not so much in broadcast television, and in some ways why broadcast television is stagnating. You know, newspapers, which I spent 19 years in, mm-hmm. newspapers are, you know, clearly on their decline. And with that, we saw the latest ASNE, American Society of News Editors, survey. They're doing another one in a few months, looking at who runs, who makes the decisions, and reporters and journalists and editors, and shows that it's still pretty stagnant. About 12% of those who are making the calls are people of color. And that affects the journalism that you and I get. You know, it's one thing to sit here on Martin Luther King Day and have this great conversation about diversity in the media, but where are these conversations in the middle of March or late August or on days that aren't focused on a holiday celebrating a great man like Dr. King? Those are where the conversations have to happen. And more importantly, when you look at the stories and the content, I participated in a content audit looking at content from a range of news sites mm-hmm. showing that if you look at the main ethnic groups, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, other, and then the coverage areas, news, sports, business, features, and other, you'll see that, for instance, African-American news is still concentrated in a few areas. It's sports, it's entertainment, it's crime. And what you don't see, even if you factor out all the coverage of President Obama, what you don't see is the mainstream coverage of people of color at the significant levels we are in the society. We'll be, you know, in some areas, in California, for instance, it's a majority-minority state. This nation will be majority-minority somewhere, you know, pick your date, 2040, 2050. Yet the media doesn't even come close to reflecting that.
Do you think it actually creates an alternate universe for some people that's still wider than the country itself?
In many areas and in many voices, you know, if you look at who runs business right now, if you turn on CNBC or Fox News or really even, you know, CNN's money coverage, you will see a disproportionate weighting of white males. And, you know, that may be who's actually running business, but you don't see as many women. You don't see as many Latinos. You don't see as many blacks in coverage. And not just business news. Take an average mainstream story like, oh, I don't know, we got tax season coming up mm-hmm. in April 15th. I challenge you and our listeners to look at the average story about tax day. Every newspaper is going to do it. Every radio and TV yep. station is going to do the tax story. How many people of color do you see there? It's not a black story. It's not a Latino story. It's not a white story. It's not an Asian story. It's just an interesting American story. Those are where we need our voices and faces represented.
But why aren't we seeing
American stories?
Why not in the news? When I look on mainstream television, I see in the commercials that are there, the advertisements, I see more and more people of color there. It's quite notable to me. Notable in part because then you go to the news and it's not quite the same. I mean, won't the demographics, ultimately, these are all businesses at bottom, won't they drive this? Or could we say stay stuck in some kind of incomplete representation of the country we're living in?
Well, that's what you'd hope. You see a lot of businesses actually who do get it. Whether it's Procter & Gamble or Coca-Cola or McDonald's,
yeah.
they understand the buying power of diverse communities, of Latinos, of African-Americans.
Why is that different from the news world, then?
We're a little slow. We understand it in many areas. There are many companies doing very well, And there are some, in fact, more of them, that have no top executive producers who are African-American or Latino, or very few Asians, or top editors in positions where they can make the call who are people of color. To this day, half of American newspapers have no senior editors of color.
You think that's what it takes to make the difference? It won't be the demographic pressure itself or demands from readers or people who go or view elsewhere because they don't see themselves?
Well, that will ultimately will be the survival and growth of media when they truly can produce content that is interesting and reflective of the communities they cover. They'll make more money. They'll get more eyeballs. They'll sell more papers. They'll get more traffic to the website if there's content that has a range of interests. And if they don't, they'll die.
Brian Monroe, Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington editor for opinion and commentary at CNN. On this Martin Luther King Day, glad to take a moment to look at that face, those faces of this country. Brian, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Tomorrow in this hour, we'll look at The Wolf of Wall Street, the big Hollywood movie making waves well beyond its Academy Award nominations. We will catch up with the controversy. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.